and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Dr. Arnold Baskies returns. Dr. Baskies, I was going to start giving your credentials here, but it's just ridiculous. So why don't you just tell us who you are?
Well, actually, many people in my family would tell you that I was a ridiculous person, so it's not it's not an unusual thing. So I'm a surgical oncologist. I trained at Boston and at the National Cancer Institute. I've been a cancer surgeon for over 40 years. My involvement in particularly with breast cancer has gotten me more and more invested with the American Cancer Society, where I've served on the National Board of Directors, and I was chairman of the National Board of Directors for the American Cancer Society in 2017. I currently chair the American Cancer Society's efforts in the Philadelphia area. I chair that board. And I also work very closely with two other breast cancer organizations, one of them being the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers, which is in charge of essentially surveying and accrediting breast centers around the country. And we have about 600 breast centers that are fully accredited in the United States. And I also work with the Global Breast Cancer Initiative in Geneva, Switzerland, which is part of the World Health Organization. And we're trying to promote better breast health care in low and middle income countries. So I'm kind of busy with all of those things.
Well, you've been a part of the American Cancer Society for nearly four decades now. And every time you've been on, we've talked about the American Cancer Society. And as part of my ongoing series about breast cancer, you can't have a conversation without getting the American Cancer Society involved in that conversation. And so many times we've talked, we've never really just addressed breast cancer before. But every time we talk, it seems like the needle moves in one direction or another. And what's the buzz right now? What are you talking about today?
Well, there are a couple of things to be aware of. First of all, this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I'm really pleased that the American Cancer Society, speaking on its behalf today, is very pleased that you've featured breast cancer on your program. So it's incredibly important that we do that. Number two, when you talk about breast cancer, you're really talking about advances that have been made that are astronomical. In 1975, let me give you some basic statistics. I don't want to overwhelm you, but this is really an incredible achievement. In 1975, the overall five-year survival for breast cancer was 75%. Which means that in 1975, which isn't really so long ago, 75% of women survived at least 5 years and 25% did not. Today, breast cancer survival is well over 90%, probably closer to 93%. Why is that? Why have we come so far in a relatively short amount of time where over 90% of women survived the disease? And that's because of the investment that's been made, particularly by the American Cancer Society, investing $600 million alone in breast cancer research, $600 million in breast cancer research, and $31 million for treatment and for research in metastatic breast cancer for women whose disease is metastatic. So $600 million investment by the American Cancer Society, $31 million for breast cancer alone, for metastatic breast cancer, and over $5 billion in research for all cancers. So that's a really big chunk of the reason why we've been able to achieve the types of results that we have. And when we look at breast cancer today, unfortunately, we will probably have over 300,000 women this year will be diagnosed with the disease. And so it's something that we need to be aware of in terms of incidence, but we also should be aware of the tremendous achievements that have been made at the lab level and at the clinical level at the bedside. So that's it in a nutshell.
Is breast cancer a different animal than cancer in general?
That's a great question because it is different. One of the things that we know about breast cancer that makes it almost very unique is the fact that we know a lot about the tumor markers that are associated with breast cancer. And anybody in the listening audience who has been diagnosed with the disease knows that one of the first tests that is done after the biopsy is to see what types of receptors are present in the breast cancer cell. So we measure for things called estrogen receptors, progesterone receptors, and HER2-new. And so, in a way, that makes it a different animal, and in many ways, a more treatable animal. But we also have better treatments for women who don't have those tumor markers. In addition to that, years ago, the American Cancer Society invested in work done by Dr. King. And many people who are in the listening audience don't know who Dr. King is, but she probably has made the biggest difference for women with breast cancer because she's the person that identified the BRCA genes, BRCA1 and BRCA2. And as you know, that in women who unfortunately have those mutations in those genes are more likely to develop breast cancer over their lifetime. But she's the one who made us aware of that with some very interesting work that she did years ago. And she's a full professor that's endowed by the American Cancer Society. Had it not been for her work, who knows? We may never have known about the BRCA genes. So when you ask that question about it being different, yeah, it's very different. And it's made it possible for us to make tremendous inroads in terms of diagnosis and treatment and identifying women who are at higher risk so that we can prevent, in many instances, those women from developing breast cancer altogether.
Is that key, prevention or is it treatment?
Well, there are two keys. The
Throw
keys
that one
are,
on you.
yeah, there are really multiple keys, but at least two keys. The two keys are really just what you said, prevention in the sense of identifying women who are at high risk, which is very important, and treatment. The other key is treatment and identifying the best treatment. And one of the other things that occurred in the early 2000s, which is already about 20 years ago, was the identification of a genetic signature identification process. So we are now able to identify the different subtypes of breast cancer, and there are different subtypes. And we're also able to identify prognosis based on the genetic signature of a breast cancer. So we can now tailor the treatment, personalize the treatment for breast cancer with a simple test that's done every day. Close to 1 million women have had this test done who have been diagnosed with breast cancer. So we can actually take the cancer cells and identify what the DNA products are in that cancer cell, and then tailor a treatment based on what the genetic signature is for that breast cancer. So that's another thing that makes breast cancer so unique, is that the genetic signature of breast cancer is identifiable, quantitatable, and can direct the treatment. So there isn't one treatment for breast cancer that fits all. The genetic signature of a breast cancer determines what the prognosis is and what the best treatment is.
Oh, I want to talk about, is it location, location, location that you get this kind of treatment? But I also want to ask, continue the line of the prevention, where you say identifying women who are high risk. But when you eliminate the BRCA gene, say you don't have that mutation, who else is at high risk?
Well, that's another interesting thing that's changed a lot. So, not only do we look at BRCA1 and BRCA2, BRCA1 and BRCA2, but there's a panel of genes that we look at now that can tell us the risk levels for women, number one. Number two, don't discount the ability of mammograms today that identify women that are at high risk because it identifies women who have who end up getting a biopsy and have things called atypical hyperplasia, lobule, and carcinoma in situ. So there's some very nice studies, one in particular by a guy by the name of Blake Cady in the Massachusetts area. Blake showed that we can identify women with what we call carcinoma in situ, which is a precancerous type of a change in the breast. And by identifying those women, we can do something that prevents them from getting an invasive breast cancer. So between genetic testing and better mammography, we've been able to make inroads in terms of identifying women who have a finding on their mammogram that might lead them to be at higher risk. And we can intervene and with some medications in some instances that will prevent them from getting breast cancer altogether.
I'm going to do a little sidetrack here, but when we talk about the work of Dr. King, Dr. Katie, these are the kind of things that the American Cancer Society really funds. They find new research and get them going to where they are more easily funded. You go really
so
granular.
The American Cancer Society is very proud of a number of things, but one of the things we're most proud of is the fact that we have a stable of brilliant people that work with us all the time that identify the best and the brightest in the United States. So by identifying people with new ideas that are early investigators, we've invested millions of dollars in their work, and that's really helped them to achieve the findings that they make. So we are very heavily invested in not only scientists who have proven skills or proven discovery, but also people in the lab who are making changes every day, young investigators. And we're very good at it because we've identified 50 Nobel Prize winners before anyone ever heard of them. In other words, we found them, we identified them, and we funded their research. And then they went on to win a Nobel Prize 10, 20 years later. But their early grants came from us. So we're very good at that. We 50 Nobel Prize winners when they were relative kids, if you want to look at it that way, people who were brilliant scientists, they presented their research to us. We said, you know, this is worthy of investing. And and 50 of the Nobel Prize winners have been funded by the American Cancer Society, and we're the number one funder of cancer research overall in the United States, other than the federal government. So federal government is number one. Number two is the American Cancer Society, which has nothing to do with the federal government. It's a volunteer organization that's raised billions of dollars in the mission to eradicate cancer as we know it today.
I wanted you to blow the horn there for a little while, because when you're talking about research, that's one of the things that I've always remembered from our conversations, that you're an early funder. You find them quick and early and get them running towards that finish line.
Absolutely. That's essentially, I think, you know, when I was chairman of the board, I can't tell you how proud I was when we had announcements that people who we had funded had won a Nobel Prize. And there are 50 of them, 50 people, men, women from all walks of life, whose research was recognized by us when they were just PhD candidates. For instance, and we funded their research, and had it not been for the fact that we did that, many of them would never have gone on to win the Nobel Prize. Their discoveries would not have occurred. And that's an amazing achievement, something that I'm particularly proud of, and one of the reasons why I've been with at one level or another, either on a local level, on a state level, or on a national level with this society, because without it, we'd be in a lot of trouble.
And of course, you find them at cancer.org for the American Cancer Society. Wherever you hear this, cancer.org will get you in touch with all of the services and all the programming that they offer. And you can also locate your local chapter through them as well. That's cancer.org. And some of the other areas that the American Cancer Society is so involved with is obviously advocacy, but also education. And you said mammogram. You talk to three different women, and they have a different understanding about when and how and what the results are going to show.
Yeah, so the mammogram story has evolved. And I think what you're getting at is the changes in the guidelines that have occurred. And if you think about it, when more information becomes available, guidelines have to change. It's the nature of the beast. The population changes, the risks change along the way. And as we know, scientific discovery also makes a difference. And we also know that if you look at screening tools such as mammograms, they have improved. I remember the era when mammograms were undependable in the 1970s. The technique and the engineering of mammograms changed incredibly over the last 50 years. And so the guidelines have changed too as a reflection of what we know. And what we know is that if we want to make the most impact with mammograms, we know that screening for women at average risk Okay, for women of average risk, they should begin the discussion of a mammogram with their healthcare advisor beginning at age 40, but certainly begin screening according to the best statistics at age by age 45. So begin the discussion, think about it, and if you want, have it done beginning at age 40. There are organizations that want to see women get mammograms at an earlier age, but we know from population-based information that the biggest impacts occur when you begin to begin the process at around age 40. But certainly by age 45, women of average risk should begin their mammographic screening. There are a number of organizations that have created guidelines for screening. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is one. Ours is another one. The American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology has another set of guidelines. We feel very strongly that our guidelines are reasonable and that they will produce the types of results that we want to see for women of average risk. Now, if you're at higher risk, you have to now develop a completely different strategy. But the reason that there's been a little bit of confusion out there is that different organizations have different guidelines. Our guidelines, I feel, are very good, and they're based on pure science. We invested a lot of dollars in producing the best and most accurate set of guidelines you can imagine. They may change in the future. It depends on what the data shows. But we feel strongly that our guidelines are very reasonable and make the most sense.
Well, once again, we use the term average risk. And again, divorcing BRCA 1 and 2 from the conversation, is there a person, a type? Is there, we know that denser breasts are more risky, which you discover with that mammogram, but are there life habits or is there an ethnicity or race component in
So
risk?
So we know that that breast cancer has a relationship to obesity. We know that breast cancer has a relationship with alcohol intake. In fact, and I hate to say this, but it's true, there is no amount of alcohol that's safe when it comes to the health of the breast. There are studies that have shown that there's a direct relationship between the amount of alcohol that's drunk and the risk of developing breast cancer. There's been other studies that have shown a relationship with smoking, although that's less clear. But we know that obesity and alcohol intake are directly related to the development of breast cancer. There's data out there that shows that risk goes down with weight loss. So a healthy lifestyle for sure impacts risk for women at average risk. And we know that lifestyles in general make a difference with many other cancers, not just breast cancer.
What about location, location when getting health care? Location and access to care is very important in this conversation, and that includes economics and so many other factors. So I'm going into those social determinants now.
Right. The social determinants of health are incredibly important. We know that socioeconomics affect healthcare because of access to care and quality of care. It never should be that your zip code is more important than your genetic code. That's a worn-out phrase, but there's a lot of truth to it because the zip code often reflects not only, unfortunately, where you live, but it also sometimes reflects and oftentimes reflects income levels. And we really want to make sure that the disparities that occur in terms of socioeconomics don't impact types of care. Having said that, if a woman is seeking good breast care, she should, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, she should definitely seek out a center that is accredited by the National Accreditation Program for Breast Centers, the NAPBC. So if you're looking for some kind of good housekeeping seal of approval for the clinicians and the center that you're at, that you're considering going, make sure that it is accredited by the NAPBC. We have data that shows that treatment that is at an accredited breast center is better, the results are better than they are at a non-accredited breast center on average. We have studies that have shown that the care is better, the overall outcomes are better, and that transmits to that translates to survival. So the best advice I could give someone is if you're going to pick a place to go, which is location, 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 right? You really want to make sure that that it is an NAPBC approved and accredited center.
Your work with the World Health Organization looking to improve access and care for, again, women in countries that don't have maybe the medical resources they hear, but that describes a lot of areas in the United States as well. And that can even mean in an inner city. And you're working with an organization, a women's health company, UE Life Sciences, now too. And so getting breast care, or I should say, getting prevention into the hands of more women seems to be a goal of yours.
Well, the personal health care techniques that we have today, you can buy an Apple Watch now. And I don't, I'm not, this isn't a plug for Apple Watches, but just to give you an example, that'll tell you your oxygen saturation level, it'll tell you what your heart rate is, and it can identify whether you have an arrhythmia, a rhythm disturbance in your heart. All of those tools that I just described from a simple watch are amazing things. We take it for granted today. But what if I told you that there is a device that's been created that's handheld, that is very inexpensive, relatively inexpensive, that could identify whether or not you have a breast lump? Imagine you could have something you could hold in your hand and show you on your iPhone that there's a lump in the breast. And imagine you're in a country, let's say India, where this device is actually currently being used, one of the countries where healthcare isn't as, let's say, as available as it is in the United States, has already bought thousands of these devices. And we are in the process, we've developed that device and we're in front of the FDA now to get approval for this. So you'd be able to buy this device, have it available, scan your breast with a handheld device and confirm whether or not, not whether or not, but can identify the presence of a lump in the breast. Imagine if that was available, and that will be available in the not too distant future. A handheld device that weighs a few ounces. It's an amazing thing. And that's what UE Life Sciences, that's one of the products that we're in the process of developing now.
What else is there that women should consider, or what else does the American Cancer Society recommend to women?
Well, the what else is a lot. What we recommend to women is that they speak to their physician about the best approach, what they should do in terms of screening for not just for breast problems, but also for colon problems. So get up to date, make sure you're up to date in terms of your screening. Make sure that you've identified and discussed with your healthcare provider the risk factors that you might be that might be affecting your possible development of for a cancer, whether you're a smoker or not. And seek out the advice of those healthcare individuals so that they can stop you, can help you stop smoking. Make sure you get screened for all of the screening for the types of cancers that we have good screening for. If you're a high risk smoker, think about having a low dose CT scan. Simple test, 5 or 10 minutes can detect a small nodule in your lung. So you want to make sure that you abide by the guidelines that are available in terms of screening for colon cancer, lung cancer, and cervix cancer and breast cancer. All of those cancers are you can screen for, and adopt healthy lifestyles that hopefully decrease the risk for the development of any of those cancers.
And of course, the American Cancer Society is there every step of the way.
We have a call in our national call-in center. It's open 24 hours, 7 days a week. So people who have questions and can get navigated to the to treatment. We can answer questions in the middle of the night for anyone that has a problem or scared. We have that and that's a free service. You don't have to pay for that. Not only that, but just so that people are aware, we also have over 30 Hope Lodges, which are places that people can go to in major metropolitan centers. One of them right here in Philadelphia, that provides free lodging for patients who are getting cancer treatment. So we provide housing. We also provide free rides for treatment and for evaluation. So we're there 24 hours a day by phone. We provide you a ride if you need it. And we also provide housing if you need it in New York, in Philadelphia, and in 30 other cities around the country. So we not only invest in trying to prevent the disease, we not only invest in the best research, okay, but if you do develop cancer, we're there to help you in any way that we can. And that's really what America is about, isn't it?
Yeah, and the American Cancer Society, when you go to the website, you can do your own research and just find out everything from cancer types, what is cancer, risks and prevention, signs and symptoms. It can help you with making treatment decisions, even talking about financial and insurance matters. It really does go every step of the way, wherever you are in your cancer journey. And may you never have to experience a cancer journey, but if you do, the American Cancer Society, cancer.org is right there. And we're running out of time. I hate to say this, but what's the takeaway? What do you want us to learn from this conversation?
Well, first of all, thank you for allowing us to talk. It's really great conversation. There's a lot of, if you do develop cancer, it's not a hopeless situation. Cancer in many instances is curable and at least treatable, so that we can provide the best kind of survivorship if you are diagnosed with it. So keep in mind that there have been a tremendous number of advances, and seek out the best treatment that you can. And we can advise you on all of those aspects of care. The American Cancer Society is, as you said, available 24 hours a day to help you. So you're not alone in this process. Survivorship has become a big issue, and we're very proud of the fact that right now, where there are 14 and a half million people in the United States who, like you, have developed a can type of cancer. Unfortunately, we're going to have more of those survivors, but survival from cancer is achievable. And so keep that in mind.
And you know, we never even got into it, but there are so many different ways that you can actually help the American Cancer Society, volunteer opportunities, the annual Making Strides campaign. All of these are out there for anyone to help with the work that you do, the funding, the advocacy, the research work, all of that. It depends on all of us, and we find out more information about all of that at cancer.org as well. Dr. Baskies, thank you so much for taking the time today.
First of all, I want to thank you, and I want to thank your station for allowing us to have this conversation, which is so important. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. If you haven't had your mammogram this year and you meet the guidelines, definitely have it done. Make sure you see your physician, get examined, and also remember that even though October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, that doesn't mean if you miss your mammogram in October that you shouldn't have it done. The whole year is really should be Breast Cancer Awareness Year. But we won't be able to make the types of improvements in survival unless we all work together, and that's what we're here for.
And of course, cancer.org to find out anything we've talked about today and far more about the American Cancer Society. That is cancer.org. I can't go through your credentials again. Dr. Arnold Baskie is my guest today, a surgical oncologist, 4 decades with the American Cancer Society, working with the World Health Organization. You name it, you've been there, the American Society of Breast Surgeons. You are the grand favorite of this topic. And so thank you again for being on today.
Thank you so much.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.